It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. We've got an important show planned for you today. We hope that you had a great Memorial Day holiday. How about you, Steve? Did you have a good day yesterday?
One word. Incredible.
How so?
Oh, just you're going to make me say something I shouldn't say on the air. We did a lot of family-related things, and you know, we hadn't seen each other in 3 months, so... You know, it was good stuff, and got a lot done on all my projects. So, you know, I give it high marks.
Well, and that's great. And, you know, I was really pleased with the number of actual Memorial Day tributes yesterday to remember all of those that have gone before us to preserve liberty. So I agree with you. It was a very important day. So I'm glad you had a great day. We've got a very important show planned for you today. Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors will be with us. It looks like the economy is going to open up. You know, Chris is a guy who buys and sells opportunity, and helps you buy and sell opportunity, I should say. And so we'll chat with him in this first segment. Steve Ryder was on last week regarding his wife, Elizabeth, and the fact that he had not been able to see her for over 17 days. And he's going to share his story in this second segment. You won't want to miss that. Colorado Representative Mark Baisley will join us in the third and fourth segment regarding his update on asking DA George Brockler to take a look into the possibility that CDPHE was asking nursing homes that they were actually overriding nursing homes on cause of death on death certificates. And then it looks like the Colorado legislature is going to be opening up. Governor Polis issued an executive order, I guess yesterday. Mr. Executive Order, Patty calls. She said, guess what? There's another executive order, but you're going to like this one. He's actually going to open up our bars, our restaurants, and our taverns. Of course, just within what kind of rules will that be? But again, he has been issuing all kinds of executive orders. I think, Steve, that he realized this last weekend, of course, Douglas County got a variance so that the bars and restaurants and taverns in Douglas County could open. And many, many different businesses went ahead and opened. And I think instead of him, he's trying to look like he's proactive, but I think it's actually been reactive. But it's good. We'll talk with Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, at the bottom of the hour to see what the markets think about this whole thing. As we are looking at these issues, my friends, put your thinking caps on. As Rudyard Kipling said, he says, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And there is something that needs to be on your radar today. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And Colorado Senator Michael Bennett is having a town hall this afternoon, and we're going to get this information out on Facebook on how you can sign up. And this is a Facebook on what would be a national health force. Now, when you take a look at what these public health departments have been doing throughout the country, do you, Steve, do you really think that we need a national health force? I mean, I see all kinds of danger all over that, Steve.
Well, going through the story that, you know, Patty sends us, all I could see was redundancy, another layer of government that is basically duplicating so much of what's already out there. What is the point?
The point is power and control. And when we're talking about this contact tracing and that they're going to go to people's homes and test for this, the COVID-19, I actually was talking with a healthcare provider, a doctor, within the last week or so. And I said, what do you think? And I would not say that this particular person is a real Trump fan. But he basically said, yes, there is a coronavirus. And yes, if you get it, you get sick. But most people recover from that. He said, this is an overblown hoax on what is going on with this. And you see Senator Bennett and Senator Gillibrand are coming in, and they're going to want to, you know, put more control on people's lives because of, quote unquote, the coronavirus. So we'll get that information there. Before I get down the road a little bit, again, Mr. Executive Order, Governor Polis issued an executive order saying that future initiatives to get onto the ballot in their petition signing process, they can actually do that via email or mail-in, which that opens up all kinds of fraud. But Juliana Day, who is spearheading this due date too late, she actually has to go out and get signatures, hard signatures on a piece of paper, have that notarized, and those signatures will be due at the end of this week. And so you can go to, let's see, it's 120.coloradokidsfirst.org. I think it is. I forgot to put that there. We'll have to get that out as well. And see if your signature has been accepted. Mine was not. So I signed another petition so that we can get this due date too late, which is basically saying that late-term abortion would no longer be legal here in Colorado. So be sure and check that out as well. And then Jen Hewlin, it looks like some of these restaurants, I think that there was a lawsuit that was, let me get down to the headline here, a lawsuit was filed against, I think, the state of Colorado regarding, I think this is from CNC. Hold on just a second. I got to get down here. It's one thing. I don't have my hard copies of, I'll find that here in just a minute. I think there's been a lawsuit that has been filed because of all of the money that's been lost by these restaurants, and so that's going to be important as well. Now, I want to go back to this, what I had just mentioned regarding Polis, and that, or excuse me, Senator Bennett. I'm actually traveling, and so I don't have everything right here. Here we go. Senator Bennett, this is what this health force would do. It would be responsible for conducting contact tracing, administering COVID-19 tests, including antibody tests, providing COVID-19 vaccinations when available.
Hang on a second.
Sure.
As you go down this list, let's tag them as whether they're already being done or not. So conducting contact tracing. Well, they're just getting started with it, but we all know everybody wants to do it. So that's on the futures list.
Steve, do you not see big danger in that?
Oh, I'm not. That's not the debate here. I'm just looking at the redundancy aspect of it.
Oh, you're saying people are already doing that?
Yes.
This is the thing where there's the biggest danger, is to trace where people have gone. And again, going back to this is a part of the coronavirus is part of the common cold family, and so you're going to be tracing people on that have been exposed to basically kind of the common cold. You're going to trace everybody, and then possibly forcibly administering COVID tests, providing COVID-19 vaccinations. Wait, wouldn't you want to get that from your doctor? Sharing your COVID-19 public health messages with community members, including debunking myths and perceptions. Steve, do you think that might be tapping down the truth?
Oh, it opens the door for it, yes.
Okay, providing data interest support of surveillance, providing community-based and home-based services, providing palliative and hospice care. This thing is very, very scary, and so we need to stay on top of that. Let's go ahead and go to Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors. Chris Cantwell, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim and Steve. Hope you're both doing fantastic. And a big thank you out there to all those veterans. Hope everybody had a wonderful Memorial Day.
You know, it's such an important day to stop and pause to say thank you to all those who have been willing to put their lives on the line and who have put their lives on the line for freedom and liberty. And Chris Cantwell, one of the components of that is the liberty for people to go after their hopes and dreams. Trans World Business Advisors, you help people buy and sell their businesses, their hopes and their dreams. Looks like we're going to be coming out of part of this economic shutdown. So what do you see happening over in the business arena, Chris Cantwell?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Well, you know, they're it's great to see these businesses finally getting the opportunity to reopen and engage with their consumers and their clients and their customers and bring their employees back and get the economic engine started again. So I'm excited to see that begin to happen. And yeah, I work in the industries. We work with what we consider small businesses. These are businesses that are typically under 500 employees, but we'll work with businesses that are solopreneurs, that have just two or three employees. We work with what we call Main Street businesses, and those might be retail. They could be restaurant or hospitality related, service businesses, whether you're business-to-business service or business-to-consumer service, manufacturing, distribution, industrial, professional services. These are truly the economic engine businesses, and the majority of the businesses, small businesses that are out there, they actually make up 99% of all business are small businesses. So we've got to get these things running again. And if you've got a small business and you've been thinking about selling and you're wondering, wow, maybe I just shut my business down. Is my business worth anything? Businesses are basically sold, to speak generically, on a multiple of cash flow, but maybe your business just doesn't have much cash flow, or maybe your business is now distressed and you don't have any cash flow. Those businesses can still be sold. So if you've got a business and you're just curious on what your business might be worth in the market today, or what it could be worth in the market 3 years from now, or if you've just got a distressed business and you're ready to get out of it, or if you're ready to retire or been doing it too long, that's where I can help. And I don't charge for any consulting. I'm happy to just give you some advice and talk with business owners and let them know what I see, that what's going on in the market and what their business may be worth.
You know, Chris, it's so interesting that you would mention that, because during disruptions, there's great opportunity. I had a friend that back in the 80s, when the oil and gas market, he was a geologist, had, you know, really tanked here in Colorado. I mean, it was a difficult time in Colorado. And he actually bought a business totally unrelated to geology, and it became so successful. So I think people need to remember that there's always opportunity here, and you are the person to talk to about that. So how can people reach you, Chris Cantwell?
They can call me direct at 844-SELL-BIZ, B-I-Z, 844-SELL-BIZ, or they can find all of my information on your landing page at kimmonson.com.
Okay, so Chris Cantwell, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week with an update. Appreciate you getting us through all this, because there is great opportunity right now. I want people to remember that. This is America, and there's great opportunity, Chris Cantwell. Thanks so much.
Amen to that. Have a great week, Kim.
Okay, thank you. And before we go to break, I did drive by Hooters restaurants just to check and see what it looked like yesterday. And yes, they are open, and it's just almost like, you know, the veil is coming off. All these different restaurants are open. So be sure and go to Hooters restaurants. They are a very valued partner of mine. Wednesdays are wing day. So tomorrow's a great day to go. You buy 20 wings, you get 10 for free. Kids do eat free with the purchase of an adult entree. They have all kinds of lunch specials. So get out. You know, people are ready to get out and get some of those great Hooters wings, Steve.
All right. I highly endorse it. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, they're delicious. So, hey, let's go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Steve Ryder. You will not want to miss this story. It'll break your heart. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and on the line with me is Steve Ryder. And Steve was on the show last week. His wife, Elizabeth, had been in the hospital for a significant amount of time, and he was not able to see her. Steve Ryder, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back on, Kim.
Steve, update us. What happened?
So last week when we talked, she had been in there for about 19 days. Actually, it was 20 days. The day that I was on the show, she was on there in the hospital for her 20th day. She went into the hospital with double pneumonia and a blood infection. They thought it was COVID originally, and so they tested her, and she was negative. And so because the COVID test had such a high negative rate, they thought, well, maybe it still is COVID. And so she went into a doctor, a local nurse practitioner. They gave her a Z-Pack and thought, it could be, if it's an antibiotic, let's try and knock it out this way. Here's some nebulizer medicine. Let's keep those lungs clear. Here's all the indicators that you need to be watching at home. And over the next 7 weeks, she was really up and down and up and down, up and down. Some days she'd be good. She'd be up walking around. She was always on oxygen just because we wanted to make sure that the pulse ox numbers were good. But there were some days where she just would just lay in bed all day, and you know, the boys and I would take care of her. I've got 15 and 13-year-old boys. And in late April, in fact, it was like the 28th, she started, it was probably her worst day. And in fact, I wasn't feeling good either. And so the two of us just laid in bed all day. She woke up at about 4:30 in the morning that night, throwing up, couldn't keep a sip of water down, and we decided, yeah, it's time for you to go to the hospital. We probably would have gone earlier if not for the fact that we knew that she would not get any visitors. And so she went in and was transferred up to the Anschutz campus. And as we were getting ready to pack up and get a hotel up there, we live down in Falcon. She goes up there because she has pulmonary hypertension, lupus, and the best doctors that we've worked with were up there at the Anschutz campus in Aurora. And her pulmonary doctor, Dr. Todd Bull, who's one of the most amazing human beings in my life that I've ever known, he immediately was like, I want her up here. And so I was like, fine, Dr. Bull, all right, we want to have visitors for the first, you know, few days. And originally it was like, okay, she's going to be here for a little bit. We're sending her home for some IV antibiotics. You'll be good. But then they realized that there was a blood infection that was pretty significant, and also the pneumonia, and they wanted to identify what the lung infection was. So infectious disease got involved. They tried to grow the bacteria in some petri dishes so that way they could hit with various antibiotics and see what was most effective. And she never really responded to the antibiotics like they had hoped. It was a slow go, a real slow go. The first few days that she was in there, I had never seen my wife that sick before, and she was in the hospital 5.5 years ago with congestive heart failure and an enlarged heart. And I remember calling them. I'm saying, I've never seen my wife this sick before. I need to get in to see her. No, we can't, because we're protecting patients. We're protecting doctors. We're protecting everyone. And so a buddy of mine who has a PR company sent out a blast to 700-plus reporters, 300, I think 250-plus here in Colorado, and however many more hospital reporters around the nation. And I got some bites. A couple local TV stations did something. Kim, you found out about it. A couple other radio shows found out about it, and I started doing a media blitz. Nothing ever happened. The hospital finally called me, and they were kind of a jerk about it. They were basically saying that, you know, we were doing this because of CDC guidelines and no exceptions. So, but I've never seen my wife this sick before. The first night that she was there, because the infection in her lungs was so great and because she was so dehydrated from the antibiotics that they were giving her, she had like this massive diarrhea. She actually thought she was choking to death on her phlegm. She told me that the next morning, and I said, if you guys are allowing people in for end-of-life exceptions, why can't I be in? Because she thought she was dying. No, we're not giving an exception. So she improved, they changed something, and all of a sudden one of her lungs started to bleed on the inside. And I got a call at 2:30 in the morning on a Saturday saying, your wife's bleeding, she's stable, but we're moving her into ICU. I got a call at 5:30 that morning saying, she's stable, she's still bleeding, she's gotten 4 units of blood transfused, but she's stable. We're trying to figure out how to stop the bleeding. later that morning, I found out they did successfully stop the bleeding. She was in ICU for a number of days. And I kept asking, I kept asking. And anyway, she started to improve. And when we talked, it was the 20th day last week. And the doctors that day had said, okay, sometime later this week, she's going to come home. And we're going to probably have her with some home IV antibiotics. And she's going to have to come back in. Because the bleeding in her lungs, she had two tubes into her lung that were basically flushing fluid in and pulling it out. So that way they would clean that blood out. And the tubes were incredibly painful. Those days that that she had those tubes in, she slept horribly. And on Mother's Day, we talked, and I tried cheering her up, and I couldn't cheer her up. She wouldn't smile once. Not being able to be able to hold her kids' hands, and I again asked myself, I've never seen my wife this. My wife doesn't get depressed. She does not. She didn't. And I told them, I've never seen her this depressed. Please let me in. Please let my kids in. And they kept saying no. And so Tuesday, we talked in the afternoon about 4 o'clock, and she was excited. She was getting ready to come home. She was going to come home either Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. They weren't quite sure. We had a great 8-minute conversation, lots of smiles. We're like, all right, we're seeing the end of this. We're seeing this is the end. And 40 minutes after I hung up with her, I got a call from the hospital. I thought they were calm because we're okay, come tomorrow. These are the plans. This is where you're going to pick her up. Instead, they called and told me she went into cardiac arrest.
Oh, Steve.
20 minutes into the drive, it's an hour and a half for me to get up to hand shoots. 20 minutes into the drive, I called back and they said they were still doing chest compressions, and I knew I wasn't going to meet. I knew I wasn't. My wife wasn't going to be alive when I got there. And when I got to the tech center, I called again, and Dr. Bull told me that they just stopped. They weren't able to bring her back. So I get to the ER. So I get to the hospital, and I can't figure out how to get in. They make me walk all the way around to the ER entrance, and a buddy of mine met me there. And the ER people are like, all right, we'll have someone come escort you up. And what felt to me like about 7-8 minutes, John, my buddy, told me, he said, Steve, it was 20 minutes. They made you wait. I just blew up. And I started cussing, and I started screaming. And I was like, you guys kept me away from my wife for 21 days, and now you're making me wait down here in this ER? How dare you? How dare you? How dare you? I made a scene. Oh, my God, Kim, I made a scene.
And that's not your personality, is it? That's not your personality, is it, Steve?
No, it's not. No. No, I'm a loving dude. I love people. I'm happy. I'm go lucky. But 3.5 weeks of, since mid-March, all the stuff that we had dealt with her health, all the anger of the virtual visits, you're not going to find pneumonia on a friggin' virtual visit. You're not going to notice that. So anyway, all of a sudden, a security guard is right there, and he's like, okay, I'll take you up. So he walks me up, and I see her there. John's kind of got his arm on me. Dr. Bull kind of tells me we don't know what it was. We can authorize an autopsy. I think it might have been a blood clot that we missed. They were doing lots of scans to make sure, that there were no blood clots. And I said, yes, yeah. And so a chaplain came, gave me the sheet of paper with all the frequently asked questions and numbers to call. And he took me down the elevator, Kim, and I kid you not, when I got down to that ground floor, and John verified this, John Ramstead, my buddy, was over here on Saturday. We were hanging out in the garage with a bunch of friends. And I said, I could not believe it. As I was walking that hallway from the elevators past the cafeteria out the main entrance, at least half, Kim, I'm telling you, at least half of the doctors, nurses, staff, janitors, everyone down there was not wearing a mask. Why the hell wasn't I allowed to see my wife? Why the hell was my boy not allowed to see their mother?
if this is such a fucking pandemic, and I'm sorry for cussing, if this is such a pandemic, why weren't they wearing masks?
Steve, this is the travesty. This is, yours is just one story, and I thank you for sharing this, because we had arranged last week that you would give me an update this morning. And as you mentioned, you thought that you were going to be bringing Elizabeth home. How old was Elizabeth, Steve?
40 years old. She was 40 years old. She turned 40 in October.
So 40 years old, you thought you were going to bring her home with your children, and you get the call. When you sent me the email the next morning and you said, I'm not sure I can come on the show next Tuesday, this morning, I'm like, and then explain to me what happened. I totally understood. But Steve, I so appreciate you coming on and sharing this story. No one should die alone. And I mean, just the fact that she didn't have your touch, that just, you know, a human touch, there can be such healing in human touch. I'm very frustrated about this as well. I am so sorry.
Thank you. I know. I appreciate that so much, Kim. But during this whole thing, I remember listening to an NPR story, and I ended up finding the article. There was a study. I don't remember where. I'd have to dig it up. But basically, this study equated loneliness equaling 18 cigarettes a day, smoking 18 cigarettes. Loneliness is equal to smoking 18 cigarettes.
Oh.
So 3 weeks times 18. 3 weeks times 18. That's the kind of stress that it put on my wife's body. And yes, the doctors and nurses that were there, they gave extra. There was one night where my wife was like, her hair was really ratty, and she was like, She posted it on Facebook. She said, I prayed that someone would come braid my hair. And sure enough, one of the nurses came in and offered to braid her hair. And she said that she made relationships with the nurses and doctors that she had never done before. But she said she missed us. And she said,
it's not the same.
Exactly. She said their contact helped, but it didn't replace us. And every time I called Kim, I said, even if it's just what other hospitals are doing, which is one visitor per patient per day. Okay, so Monday I'll go, Tuesday I'll drop off our 13-year-old, and I'll let him hang out with his mother. Wednesday I'll let our 15-year-old hang out with his mother. Thursday I'll let my mother-in-law go in. Friday I'll go in, and Saturday maybe one of her best friends will go in. I wanted to rotate because I wanted her to get different people to feed her and just love on her in different ways. I didn't want it to all be about me. I wanted it to be her entire community coming alongside of her and just speaking life over her and holding her hand and stroking her hair and rebraiding her hair and rubbing her feet and massaging her feet and rubbing her back. Her tailbone hurts so bad from laying in that bed. She would tell me, oh, it hurts. It's so out of alignment. I just want a chiropractor appointment. And I said, babe, if I can get in there, I promise I'll just massage your hips, and I'll bring your favorite lotion, and I'll just massage your hips.
So the nurse, and Steve, you know what, let's, if okay with you, I'd like to continue to update our listeners.
Yeah.
With this, but an important thing here is in your email that you sent to me, you said that when you went in to see Elizabeth's body, that most staff did not have masks on. And here you were not able to see her for over 20 days. One other thing, after you were on the show last week, a listener sent me a link to the policy of the hospital where she was at, and the policy did say, oh, we're here for you, and yes, there can be one visitor per person. They never let that happen. No exceptions. This is a travesty, Steve. Your final thought before we move on, and let's update this next week, as long as that works okay for you.
Absolutely.
I know your heart is breaking. What would you like our listeners to hear today?
Number one, I just created a Facebook group yesterday for all of us that have lost family members, for us to mourn, to heal together, and most importantly, to mobilize. I am looking at all the options.
I'm looking at legal options, possibly class action. I'm not looking for a big payday. All I'm looking for is for them to pay for counseling for my boys and for me, and maybe a vacation. And number two, I'm looking for any and all media outlets to take this, and I'm looking for legislative connections. This has to be a bipartisan thing. There needs to be a law. Hospitals and our healthcare system need to be prepared for this next time. No one should be at risk of dying alone. The hospitals need to be better prepared. They need to be better prepared, and they need to pay for this mistake, for this short-sightedness. They need to pay.
Steve, my heart is breaking for you and your family. Thank you for sharing your story. I ask my listeners, our listeners, to pray for you and your family.
Thank you. Let's
stay updated. Thank you so much, Steve Ryder.
Hey, Kim.
Yes.
One last thing.
Uh-huh.
Smiles and laughs return to our home on Thursday. And so we're crying a lot, but we are laughing. We are remembering those good memories. And the healing process is... It's hard, but it's we're going through it right now. Thank you,
Steve Ryder. Our prayers are with you and your family. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim, so much for taking this out.
Absolutely. So, okay, we're going to move over to Jason McBride. Jason, I don't know what you can say this morning. You're a financial advisor. You and your team over at Presidential Wealth Management. This is heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any words that would be meaningful, I guess. I can't even imagine going through what this gentleman has gone through. I understand why he's upset, and I hope that he's able to get some resolution one way or the other, and, you know, still be able to find happiness and some type of normalcy at some point. It's just awful what they did to him.
Yeah, it's truly, truly heartbreaking. And we'll stay on this story. To his point, no one should die alone. And with this pandemic, and even going to what I was talking about earlier with Senator Michael Bennett and Senator Gillibrand coming up with this health force thing, I see all kinds of danger about that as well. Jason McBride, but what would you like to talk about this morning? Whoops, did we lose him?
Fine, Kim. Hey, just a quick, update. Looks like we're going to really have a nice, strong open on the markets across the board. It's important in a way because it should propel both the Dow and the S&P above resistance that they've been fighting for a few weeks, running behind the NASDAQ a little bit. So as far as the charts go and, you know, milestones and resistance, as long as we don't give it all back by the end of today, it's another technically constructive and important day if we're up the way it looks like we're going to be, Kim.
Okay, and so this whole rebalancing thing, if people would like to sit down during this, just all this volatility, you know, check their risk tolerances, I'd highly recommend that they reach out to you and your colleagues there at Presidential Wealth Management. And that phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, anything else before we go ahead and jump into break?
No, I think you better get going, and I don't want to take any more of your time today.
Okay. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Jason McBride. Thanks so much.
Bye, Kim.
Okay. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Colorado State Representative Mark Baisley regarding the CDPHE it looks like they've asked some of these nursing homes to change cause of death on death certificates. Very serious. Death certificates are supposed to be sacrosanct. So let's find out what's going on with that with Representative Baisley. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com also. On the line with me is Colorado State Representative Mark Baisley. And come to find out, he had gotten into his possession, one of his colleagues had given him a letter from a very fine senior care facility here in the metro area where the Colorado Health Department had come in and overridden cause of death on death certificates. And Mark Baisley didn't think that that looked like that was right. So, Mark Baisley, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. Pleasure always to be with you.
It's great to have you here as well. I'm still a little breathless about this whole interview with Steve Ryder before you came on regarding his wife dying alone. So we've got those issues out there that we'll be talking about. But you've asked District Attorney George Brockler to look into this situation. What's the update on that, Mark Baisley?
Sure. So I did spend time on the phone with, because you know, separating and all, I was on the phone with the senior deputy district attorney that District Attorney George Brockler assigned to the case, and also an investigator that he had on the phone at the same time. So we spent a good 40 minutes going over the information that had been shared with me, and I guess, to my surprise, but probably should not have been, once this became a public matter, then other people were sharing more information with me, and even other people who have a parent at that same nursing home called me up and said, "Hey, yeah, us too. And here's what's been going on with my mom or my dad that's at that nursing home." So I shared all of that information. Pardon me, and they took very seriously. These are real professionals. They are looking, you know, kind of just the facts, ma'am. Although, interestingly, they did ask quite a few questions about potential motivation. You know, why would someone alter the death certificates as is alleged? And so we did go quite deep into that, looking at the CDC website and looking at CDPHE, the state and the federal level of health agencies, and we talked about what the possible motivations might be, either in controlling folks' perceptions or trying to receive larger reimbursement amounts from the federal government for causes of death, that sort of thing. Interesting. What was interesting to me is I've just assumed that the reason that they'd been altering the cause of death on death certificates was more of a power play, more political, to convince all of us that we need to stay home, keep our businesses shuttered, and so on. But the investigators were more interested in the money motivation. So maybe that's just more their what they're used to seeing. But anyway, it is underway. They had even, to my surprise, asked me for names and phone numbers of everyone I talked to as well. So they are digging into it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they come back with.
Okay, so set this up just a little bit more with this letter that you received, which I thought it was important that this particular facility would communicate that with their community, that CDPHE had come in. And what happened exactly, now that you've are looking at this a little deeper, did the agency change the cause of death, or how did that work exactly? Have you found out, Mark?
Well, I'll tell you the best that I know. Yeah, so the that letter, so for anyone who was not caught up on that one, I'll be brief with it. It was a constituent who has a parent at the facility, at the nursing home. It's a nursing home hospice care, as you described just before going to the break, a very fine facility. In fact, my father-in-law passed on there 7 years ago, and that's where he, at the advice of our doctor, chose to spend his last days there. That's what they do. They take care of people in their final days. So they have deaths happen there pretty regularly because it's a Christian ministry, hospice, nursing home, and they take excellent care of people while they are in their final days. And so one of the parents who is there has kids who are old friends of mine, but they're constituents in Highlands Ranch, and they reached out to me and said, hey, look at this letter that the facility sent to us and to all the families of people they're caring for, and that letter said, hey, we want to assure everyone that we don't have COVID-19 spreading throughout our facility, but what's been happening is, as people are passing on, CDPHE, the state health agency, is overturning the cause of death on the death certificates of the people that we're caring for. And they said, you know, against our will, against the determination by the attending physician, against the determination by the coroner and so on. And they said, it makes us look bad, and we're taking great care of your parent. And so please don't become overly concerned. Now, it struck me for the first time then just what the impact is. This is an insult to our frontline healthcare workers who are taking care of people. It makes their numbers look terrible, even though they've been taking great care of people. That facility, which is keeping the place sanitary, swabbed down, taking all the separation precautions and so on, they are made to look like the place is riddled with COVID-19. So it's injurious to businesses. It's certainly upsetting to the families. When a family member has been there for Alzheimer's or there for leukemia and so on, and they're caring for them in their final days, and then the state comes in and says, okay, but we're going to, for our purposes, we're going to change the information on there. So that's just very upsetting to the families. So there is also one report that I received from that very facility that the staff was told that one death certificate was even flipped to say COVID-19 when there was no COVID-19 present in that patient. So it gets pretty blatant after a while, and that led to a whole nother little bunny trail. And that bunny trail came from a large company that's asked me not to name them anywhere, so I've not named them anywhere. I did mention this to the district attorney investigators, but they were kind enough to not even ask me to reveal who this was. But it was the CEO of a large Colorado company that needs to, for its sake, it needs to keep its health reputation high. And they were handed a stack of forms after having shut down for a week, stack of forms for patients to fill out. And you can find this form on the CDC website. And it's a form trying to detect what they call probable COVID-19 people. So you fill out this form, and so they were told to hand this form out to all of their employees before they all got back to work. And anyone who marks two of one variety of symptoms would be designated as probable COVID-19, and then or one of another. And so the two could be headache and sore throat. If you have a headache and sore throat, according to that, then you're listed as COVID-19. So if you're COVID-19 listed as probable, and then something happens to you, you get in a motorcycle accident, they have that record on you, and then they list it as COVID-19 death.
Oh, my gosh, Mark Baisley. Hey, you know what? Let's go to break. When we come back, this this bunny trail, this is really, really important. So we're going to go to break. I am talking with State Representative, Colorado State Representative Mark Baisley. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Predovich and Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich and Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich and Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich and Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich and Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
A recent study finds that COVID-19 economic disruption could force half of small businesses to close within 6 months. Local small business owner Jen Hewlin, Waters Edge Winery, who pledged her home for the loan to start her business, chose to fully open her business last week. As a reasonable individual, she had agreed to a pause in her business until we could better understand COVID-19. The curve has been flattened. There are enough respirators. Effective treatments are available. But the bureaucrats at Tri-County Health said no and shut her down. Jen is fighting for her economic life. Help her with legal costs and operating expenses. Go to KimMunson.com for the link to help Jen through her crowdfunding campaign.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well, and go over to Facebook and give us a like. On the line with me right now is State Representative here in Colorado, Mark Baisley. And he has started something that is so important, and he actually has asked the district attorney's office to look into this letter that he received from a constituent that was from a very fine senior care facility right here in the metro area that had indicated that CDPHE, which is the Colorado Health Department, was coming in and changing cause of death on death certificates. And death certificates, Mark Baisley, are supposed to be sacrosanct. This is when I've talked to people about this that have been in the healthcare industry, they look at me like, you're crazy. They can't do that. I said, well, they have been doing it. So it's astonishing, Mark Baisley.
It is astonishing. So, you know, when I first was looking into this, I asked that question that you're intimating, and that is, who has the authority to determine cause of death? And there are three general areas, and it's people that have licensed to do this by Department of Regulatory Agencies. So it is an attending physician, makes sense. It is a funeral director. So a funeral director, so think about the, that actually surprised me but when I read that, but it makes sense when you think about it. Funeral homes will develop relationships with places like the senior center that you're talking about, hospice centers, because they work with them when someone does pass. So they'll come in and they will determine the cause of death. And then the other is, of course, coroners, and coroners only come in under certain circumstances to determine the cause of death. But the state health agency working in a high rise in downtown Denver, they don't determine cause of death. However, they have been asserting their authority to overrule the cause of death determined by the people on the front lines. So, and that's only just been happening in the past couple of months. It's all pointing to trying to get those numbers up, which is just it seems odd, But let me give you another indicator that was brought to me by yet another Douglas County resident who had, just out of interest, looked into it and walked me through all of the numbers on the CDC website and the state website, and seeing that what we've had in the country, not in the state, but in the country, over the past 9 or 10 years, we've averaged about 37,000 deaths per year from the flu. But this year, so far, only about 6,000. So we're about halfway through, and it's looking like we'll have about a third of the numbers of folks dying from the flu. So probably, I mean, we can only guess, but probably those numbers are being transferred from the flu to COVID-19. I'll try to get those numbers up for whatever motivation. And I'm not, frankly, real concerned about what motivation. I just want the truth, and I want the truth especially for when the state is mandating that businesses close down, that the economy get impacted like it is, and that we are told to wear the mask. All those impacts, shutting down parks and skate parks and so on. Let's do that when it's reasonable, when it makes sense, when we're standing on truth. You don't do that out of the control motivation that comes from a statist, and that's the big concern. So specifically what I brought to the district attorney is, here is a crime has been committed, and that is the falsification of death certificates. So that's what they're looking into, to see if there actually had been a crime committed. So now I'm going to stand back and let the experts do that. I'm a lawmaker. I'm not a law enforcer, but they're the investigators. So we'll see how this turns out.
Well, and I'm the journalist, and so I'm going to stay on this as well. And so as we are connecting the dots on this, I actually sent a congratulatory text to some of the elected representatives in Douglas County. Once Douglas County got the variance this last weekend for our restaurants to open, and the response back was, well, we're just watching the data. Well, it's garbage in, garbage out. And so if we are shutting down the economy, as you mentioned, if we're not letting kids play on playgrounds, we just saw the CDC came out last week and said, oh, we were wrong. Actually, the virus doesn't live that long on surfaces. But what we're seeing, and you mentioned the word statist, and this is more and more control of our lives. And that's why this health force that Senator Bennett and Senator Gillibrand are introducing, and there's going to be a town hall this afternoon. We'll get that information out on our Facebook page so that people can register for that. But to use this cooked data to take more control and scare everyday hardworking people is wrong. It's just wrong. Now, one other thing, let's see, how are we doing on time? The minute, or shortly within 24 hours, Mark Baisley, of you breaking this story, I found it very interesting that Governor Polis, all of a sudden, the number of deaths in Colorado went down significantly. And actually, they had cooked the books to the tune of 31%. They had 31% more deaths that they were attributing to COVID-19. And within 24 hours, that number came down. First of all, how did that number come down within 24 hours? If, in fact, he thought that there was a real problem, there should have been an investigation and the numbers would have come down. I found that so interesting. And I think from a political standpoint, he just wanted to get out in front of that and take credit for it. I know that's kind of putting you on a spot to ask you that question, so you can take it or not, whichever you prefer.
No, I've answered that question 100 times, as you can imagine. And what they did was what all states were doing, and that was combining the actual deaths, those that can be directly attributed to COVID-19, and those where someone died of another cause, but they had COVID-19 present. So the most famous one, of course, was the guy who was found dead in a park in Montezuma County in the southwest corner of the state, who had drunk himself to death. He was 35 years old, and he had drunk so much, he had about almost twice the amount of alcohol in his blood needed to kill him. And so he absolutely died of alcohol poisoning, and that was determined by the coroner. I mean, a professional who does exactly that kind of work. And then the state overturned and called that a COVID-19 death because he had also had the COVID-19 infection. So what they did was, to get those numbers down a couple Fridays ago, was they separated those. So the numbers of people who have died from COVID-19 and people who died but they showed that they had had a COVID-19 infection or, as I'm coming to understand, had been listed as a probable COVID-19. So just assumed to have. I'll try to squeeze this in. As I was giving some deep thought to this, thinking, what does this relate to? Anything we've seen before? And I do see a pattern, and it's the climate change. Remember how climate change was supposed to give government more control over our lives, transfer wealth, and the model did not support the desire, so they changed the data for the model. And that's what we're seeing again here. It's a pattern that we get from status of attempting to have excuses to grow their presence in our lives. And
oh, my gosh. Mark Baisley, we're out of time. You're absolutely right. And so when they say follow the data, we need to make sure that the data is correct. So thank you so much, Mark Baisley.
Thanks, Kim.
Okay. And our quote for today is H.L. Mencken. He said, the urge to save humanity is almost always a false face for the urge to rule it. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.